Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
The Seahawks took UConn guard Christian Haynes with the 81st pick in the NFL draft. And you know what? We haven't spent nearly enough time talking about a hugely important position for Seattle and now a hugely important player. So let's get to it with UConn head football coach Jim Mora joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, coach, how's it going?
It's going great. How are y'all doing?
We are fantastic. We're so excited to learn a bit more about Christian. We've been talking so much about Byron getting picked in the first round, 16 overall. We had to wait so long to see Christian go that we didn't get as much time to react. So we're happy to have some insight. I saw you retweet something from Jim Nagy, and you said that it's exactly what any NFL organization is looking for, from the player to the person. Christian is as good as I've ever been around. Tell us a bit about Christian, the person, before we get to the player.
Oh, he's high character, high quality, tremendous morals, has a great moral compass, high ethics. I mean, he's just a great kid. He's very understated. He's quiet. He's serious. He's very secure in himself. He just has tremendous leadership ability. He's coachable. He's, you know, I'm a Seattle guy, right? And I was so happy to see the Seahawks draft him because I know what he's going to add, not only to the Seahawks organization, but the Seattle community. He is, as I said, he's as good a person as I've been around in 40 years of coaching. And I'm really excited for him. I'm really, as a Seahawks fan my whole life, I'm really excited for the Seahawks.
It's good. What's up, Coach? Good to hear from you. But it's awesome to hear that they're getting a good person. You know what I mean? But now let's talk about the football player. If I turn on the film, which I've done already, but if I turn on the film, what's the first thing I'm going to notice about this young man?
How tough he is. He's consistent, but he's dog tough. I mean, you know, nothing rattles him. He's going to fight through the end of every play. He's going to play with great technique and great fundamentals and great effort, but he's just, there's an element of mental and physical toughness to him, you know, a nastiness that I think you have to have at that position in order to be successful in the National Football League. He'll practice that way. He'll play that way. And when I say that, he's a guy that is going to be able to play with a nasty edge, a toughness, but he's never going to take it over the line and hurt his team. He just doesn't do that. You know, we played out Tennessee last year. Some pretty good players at Tennessee, some pretty good players in the SEC, and he dominated. I mean, he absolutely dominated the interior of our offensive line for us, so much to the point where they became so frustrated late in the game that they started taking some cheap shots at him. After the game, they kind of came after him, and he was able to keep his cool and get out of what could have been an ugly situation. I think we all saw the clip from the Senior Bowl where, you know, in the one-on-one pass rush, it's heated, it's intense, it's emotional, great competition. Defensive lineman pulled his helmet off and threw it. And rather than react in a way that would hurt his team on game day, Christian just went and put his helmet on and just kept going to work. And so as a coach, you love that. You know, you love a guy that's going to exhibit great toughness but never do anything to hurt his football team.
Well, yeah, that led me into my next question, because it was going to be, there's a couple spots I looked at when researching him, and it says he has the ability to get under the opponent's skin. So that's exactly what you're talking about. It just relentless beat you up, but do it in a way that doesn't hurt the squad. I love that.
Yeah, and he's very talented. You know, he plays with great leverage. He has tremendous balance. He's very powerful. You know, he was the unquestioned leader of our football team last year. And even into the year before. And you know, he's a guy, when he says something, everyone reacts because he doesn't say a lot. And, you know, leadership's about your actions, not your words. And every action that he ever takes really represents what you're looking for as a football coach or an organization. Now, I was really excited to see him go to Seattle, really excited. You know, you guys picked up two, the city of Seattle picked up two UConn people in the last couple of weeks. You got Nika Mule with the Storm, mm-hmm. and then you got Christian, and they are two of the finest examples of what a coach is looking for on this campus. We're really in the country, in my opinion.
Were you surprised to see that he fell all the way to 81?
I thought that he'd probably go in the second round, But, you know, guard's not necessarily a premium position, and you can get guards a little bit later in the draft. So, you know, the thing about the draft that I learned in my 29, 30 years in the NFL is that you really – nothing should surprise you, you know.
Right.
The complexion of the draft changes every time a pick is made. Everyone has different priorities. You know, guys are ranked differently. When something happens, it affects, you know, what's going to happen to someone down the road. So I wasn't surprised. I had hoped that he'd go earlier. But the fact that he's going to Seattle, my home team, I'm ecstatic about it for the Seahawks and for Christian. I mean, he's going to do very, very well there. I think it's going to be, you know, he's potentially a guy that'll, you know, he'll be a mainstay. He'll be there for 15 years, and he certainly has that potential.
Was there a moment where you realized that you might have found some gold in this young man? Was it training camp? Was it in an actual game? Can you kind of pinpoint the moment where you realized you had something special?
Well, you know, I only got here 2 years ago, and when I first met him, you know, your first impressions of him are just a very mature, well, you know, intelligent, put together young man, and very serious, as I said. And you know, that feeling just kept growing. But he's the guy that, you know, when things aren't going well, you know, he doesn't get down. He's trying to rally everybody. Now, he's not a rah-rah guy, but he's doing it more by his actions. When things are going well, you know, he's not letting anybody get carried away. He's a guy that, as a coach, you can count on every single practice. But I would go back to that Tennessee game this year where, you know, those are really good players at Tennessee. And, you know, and the way he played, the way he conducted himself, you know, I just went, you know what, this really confirms all the things that I've been learning about this young man over the last couple of years.
I think it's important because he was a team captain, correct? And I think that, you know,
this is
a team coach that's been looking for – Dwayne Brown was here for a couple years, and he was just unquestioned leader there. And then he was gone. And I think that they've been kind of searching for that, and they're so young. Could you talk just a bit more? You've talked so much about Christian as a person. It's so clear how high you are on him. But what was behind him becoming team captain? It's not often that you see a guard be team captain.
It was his actions. You know, it was how he conducted himself daily. It was the standard that he held himself to, and he held his teammates to. It was where he worked every day. It was his attitude when things were going well, when things weren't going well. You know, he's just a man, and it's going to take him a while to work into a leadership position at that level. I mean, you know, you have to establish yourself on the film or on the field. You have to, you know, establish yourself in the locker room. He's not going to come in there and be a rah-rah guy. He's not going to try to impose his personality on people. He's going to let his actions speak for him, and you're going to find a guy that when you deal with him and he's dealing with the media, he's going to be a straight shooter. He's not going to ever do anything to embarrass the organization or the city or himself or his family. And I think, you know, over time, and I don't think it'll be a long time, there'll be a lot of people in that organization, players and members of the staff that just go, wow, we've got a gem here. I mean, this guy's everything we want as a player, as a person, as a leader. We can build around him for a long, long time and have the trust that he's always going to do the right thing for this team and this organization.
Everything I've seen on film shows that he's just a good overall player, right? He can pass, block, can get after it in the run game. But is there something specific that he does that you think makes him elite when it comes to comparing him to other guards?
It's the way he competes. But in terms of his physical skills, you know, I think, you know, we run a lot of outside zone, which is a very common scheme in the NFL. And he's athletic enough to sift through the front line and get to the second level. You know, if you're going to run a power scheme, he's got the ability to pull and kick out or pull and turn it up and get to the second level. You know, he can really anchor well in pass pro. He plays with very good leverage. He's got long arms, so he can sit and anchor and probably handle, you know, some of the better three techniques that he's going to see. He might need some help, but, you know, I think he's got very good ability to protect. And then he's very intelligent. You know, so this is interesting. This is great. I'm glad I thought of this right now. So there's an award. Now, this is pretty cool now. There's an award that our academic staff, the UConn academic staff, created last year to recognize academic excellence. And it is named the Christian Haynes Award.
Oh,
they named it after Christian. And so to me, that's just an amazing example. They did it while he was still here, you know, as he was graduating. I mean, he graduates this weekend, but it's just crazy that they would name the Academic Excellence Award after him. Usually kind of the guy's gone 5 or 6 years and they go, hey, let's recognize what this guy did. But they named it after him when he was still on campus, and they did it at our awards banquet last year. So I thought that was really special.
Hey, Coach, we appreciate all of your insight about Christian. We just only have you for maybe one more question. Can I ask you a question about coaching?
Yeah.
Okay. You obviously, every coach, when you've been coaching, you know, for as long as you have, you've had trials and tribulations, you've found success, you've struggled, you've learned a ton. So I'm hoping to just pick your brain on this quickly. You took over at UConn in 2021, and obviously you've been with other teams. One of the things that we've been talking about all offseason is like, oh, new head coach, new head coach, new head coach. But I don't understand what it's like to take over as a head coach somewhere, right? And I can't wrap my mind around it, and there's so many things I'm never going to understand about it. In your experience, what's that like? Like, you take over as a new head coach, and it's a balancing act. You've got to install your culture. There's a past there. What have you learned about that process? What do you like about it, and maybe what's been a struggle?
I think the most important thing you can do is come in and work to build trust every single day with not only your players, but with everyone in the organization. You know, you and the quarterback are the face of the organization. People are going to look to you every day when things are going good, when things are going bad. I think the most important thing you do is create trust. When you create trust, then you try to implement your culture. Guys are going to believe in you much quicker. And trust is very, very fragile, as we know. And when it breaks, it's hard to put it back together. And that's always a challenge, you know, because you're a new face. They don't really know you. But to me, that's the most important thing. The difficult thing is coming in and, you know, you have to make really tough decisions on players that have been there before. You've got to make really tough decisions on coaching staff, you know, disrupting families, disrupting careers. And that can be difficult. I think the important thing is not to consider it difficult for you, but consider how difficult it is for the person that you're having to make a decision for decision on. But it's also exhilarating. You know, there's this energy and this sense of newness, and you're creating new partnerships. You know, and with John Schneider there, you know, there's been a real stabilizing factor there. And you know, Coach Pete had done such an amazing job of creating something special there that it's always going to be a challenge to follow him. But I think it's exhilarating. You know, you don't want to do it too often. That means you're getting fired a lot. So I hope I don't ever have to do it again. I've had to do it too many times. But it's challenging. It's exhilarating. It's exciting. You know, at times it's frustrating. But it's, you know, if you're a competitor, you just love the chance to do what we do.
Well, I don't think you're going to have to do it again. You're doing great work with UConn. I know that in nearly a decade, you were the first coach to make them bowl eligible. So really good stuff there with the Huskies, and really good insight with us, Coach. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Coach.
My pleasure. All right. Great talking to you guys. Take care.
Take care. All right. Before we move on to headline rewrites, I appreciated all of his answers about Christian Haynes, and I learned so much about Christian. I'm excited to move forward with that information. I love the idea of Christian as a captain, as a leader. The academic award being named after him is really cool. Imagine not winning an award named after you, though. I hope he won it.
That's nuts.
I hope he did. I
He's
forgot
still
to
enrolled.
Ask. But I think that what also stands out to me is our final question to Coach Mora about.
And you know what, Stacey?
Huh?
That was a great question.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What did you make of his answer as being, like, at its core, becoming a new coach centers around trust?
Yeah, that's facts. I've played for coaches that no one really trusted. I've been in rooms with grown men, players, coaches, assistants that people don't trust. So you're having these conversations and they're preaching their philosophies and their messages. And, you know, everyone's rolling their eyes like, okay, sure. And
right.
What that happens, or what that creates, is horrible practice habits. Accountability not being there, people not pushing each other. It's just very toxic. So I think that's extremely important. And I think that's why it's important that, you know, Mike McDonald did do some redecorating. That he did have a draft where they went heavy defense and picked up a bunch of guys and focused on the trenches. Because, one, that shows the team that he has good intentions. And they can sense that immediately. And everything I've heard about Mike McDonald so far is that guys are bought in. Now you got to be consistent because the message could wear out. I hope it takes 14 years for it to wear out because it took 14 years for Pete Carroll's message to wear out here a little bit. So, no, I think Coach Moore was exactly right.
I would imagine, too, Bump, that as a player, you've obviously been a player under new head coaches. And not only that, but just as a new player under an existing coach, trust isn't just, I trust you know what you're doing. It can also, I'm assuming, be, I trust you know who you want to be. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't want to play for a head coach who didn't know who he was. And, like, part of that trust is, I trust you know what you're doing. Like, I don't have the directions. Do you have the directions? Like, that's kind of the approach I'd have with my head coach.
Yeah, if you don't know who you are, you shouldn't be in a position of leadership. And the thing about a football locker room, and most locker rooms, I mean, whether it be football, basketball, soccer, hockey, whatever. But football, you have more analysts because you got 53 guys on the roster, the game day roster, about 60-something total. And there's more opportunities for guys to kind of see through your BS if you're pumping out BS. So it's extremely important, man, to be know who you are and be that person every single day and not switch up on them because you've had a bad week.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the breaking news of the day. About an hour ago, the Kraken announced they are firing head coach Dave Hackstall. Ron Francis, GM, said he will begin his search for his replacement immediately. What's the real headline?
Will he begin a search for better talent immediately? That is what I'm wondering when it comes to Ron Francis. We spoke with Seattle Times reporter Kate Shefty when the news broke. She was kind enough to join us on a last second notice. And one of the things that stood out to me, Bump, was her saying, you know what? I don't know that this was entirely Dave Hackstall losing a clubhouse. I think this is the nature of how head coaching works. Sometimes when a lot of things fall apart, even if it's not your fault, you get fired.
Yeah, that's just the life of a head coach. There are some things that he could have done better, and there are some things that management could have done better to help him do his job. So I like your point of, all right, can you go and get some more talent? Because when it comes down to it, you can have the greatest scheme in the world, the best philosophy, all the quotes on the wall and the structure and everything else is there. If you don't have the Jimmys and Joes, X's and O's don't even matter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a mixture of things. And sometimes you just need a fresh start. That's what's going to happen. But, yeah, I'm with you. I hope they go out and hit the market and go ahead and get the best talent you can get out there. So, we can have that Kraken fever again.
Francis will speak to the media today at 2:30 p.m. What's next?
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Mariners won their fourth straight series thanks to some more incredible starting pitching against the Arizona Diamondbacks. What's the real headline?
If only George Kirby could swing a bat. I mean, maybe he can.
I'm sure at some point he had to swing a bat,
could.
Right?
Yeah, but there is a stat that we looked at earlier that I completely forgot to read, which was George Kirby. Yes, he did have a career high 12 strikeouts on Saturday, and that was amazing to watch. It was just pure filth. But also, in their past two starters faced, the Mariners have allowed those two starters to have career high single game records for strikeouts.
Yeah, that's never good. What game was it? It was game three, 15 combined Ks, right? That's
Thunder.
Not very good on the Mariners' end. And they score the runs mostly off of home runs, and this isn't the type of approach we expected. I love to see it. Ty go yard twice in a series for show. Rojas, do your thing as well. You got Mitch, pick one, both of them win yard. Yeah, that's good. But we also feel that for them to have sustained success, they have to be the team that they put together. And the team they put together relies on their strong pitching, which we've seen, and relies on getting runners on base. They were 3-for-8 with runners in scoring position. There were some days, some games last year, even this year, where they're like 1-for-12, 1-for-11, and we're saying, what are they doing? They got to drive these runs in. I would love to have the more opportunities with those guys in running position than or scoring position than not. So, yes. We are happy of the success that these guys have been having the last four series, but there are some things that we feel, and I think most people feel, that if they want to be successful, you have to see, which is just getting guys on base.
It really is. I'm just so stumped with it. I got into a little bit of a back and forth, not an argument, but earlier with a listener who said, well, this is, you know, they moved on from Gino and Teo because of payroll stuff, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, yes, you're right. But what's weird to me is not why they moved on from those two, but that they moved on from those two. And even though we all kind of thought it was payroll related, said that it was also because of those strikeouts.
Yeah.
Brought in guys who in their careers have struck out less often. And those guys are striking out more than they ever have. And this team is on pace to strike out more than it did last year. I don't think it'll stay like that.
No, I don't think so.
But I'm so stumped.
Yeah, well, 28% of the time they're striking out, which leads MLB. Yeah, the guys that they brought in and the philosophy they were preaching made complete sense. Yes, the strikeout numbers should go down. Something ain't right. And again, it's early in that sense to where you feel like this team can get hot and go on a run. They've taken care of business. They've beaten the teams they're supposed to beat in the last four series. Now the big boys are coming into town. You have to put the ball in play and give your pitchers some run support. The chances of you getting a quality start are high, but against an Atlanta Braves team that is hot and the bats are going, and we're going to see J.K.
Yeah.
Man, you need to help support those pitchers, man.
Return of Jared Kelnick, I haven't even mentioned yet today. It'll be a very interesting series. What's next?
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Matt Brash has been shut down indefinitely, and he'll fly to Dallas to meet with doctors for further evaluation of his elbow. Mariners GM Justin Hollander called it, quote, concerning. What's the real headline?
I don't think we see Matt Brash again this season.
I've been concerned. As soon as my man felt that little tweak in his arm area, he wouldn't tell us, but he looks at his elbow, gave it away. We knew something was up. The longer you wait to kind of get the process going, if surgery is necessary, the longer he's going to be absent from this team. Thankfully, the bullpen has been you know, they're getting better. They're finding their stride, man. Salcedo's doing his thing. Spire, you got Stanek. The team is coming together. But we were hoping that he would get to T-Mobile, a knight in shining armor, riding through the streets on his horse and save the day and say, don't worry, bullpen, you've held it down. Now I got you. It doesn't sound like we're going to see that. But this rotation of bullpen's in a good place. It'd be a lot better if Brash was available, though.
All right, coming up at 1 p.m., less than 40 minutes from now, we're going to open up phone lines, and you guys are going to be draft analysts. What grade would you give this Hawks draft class? That number is going to be 866-979-3776. I will say, Bump, I assumed that every single grade that we would see would be an A, just because most of what I'm seeing has been really positive. Okay. Yeah. I saw a surprisingly low grade on the text line earlier, and I'm curious to see if that person's going to call in. And I don't know why it was low. Maybe they were just being difficult.
That has to be it.
Didn't have a reason along with it. But we'll see. So again, that number is going to be 866-979-3776. It's going to be so simple. All you have to do is tell us your grade for the draft class and why. I'm guessing most people are pretty high on it, but you don't have to be if you're not. We want everyone's opinions. Again, that is coming your way in 40 minutes. Before we get to it, the GM of one NFL team went on a rant defending his newest draft pick. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we are going to start in Indianapolis, where Colts GM Chris Ballard made it known he is not a fan of anonymous reports that trash the character of Indy's second-round pick wide receiver Adonai Mitchell.
I don't know. I mean, I read some of the that was set on TV. I mean, just a typical, excuse my language, our typical lead, unnamed sources, you know, bad interview. That's such, I mean, it's like, put your name on it. I'm tired of, we tear these young men down. These are 21, 22 young men. And if people out there can tell me they're perfect in their lives, it's crap. It's crap. This is a good kid. And, you know, for those reports to come out, like, you know, I said it last year. I'm sorry. I apologize for the language. I don't, but I do.
I don't, but I do. So apparently numerous teams had concerns about Mitchell's character after meeting him. These reports are in an aggregated column on SB Nation, but they're from multiple different outlets. But I'm pulling them from SB Nation. So one of them was that after meeting with some front offices, one NFC scout said, "Love the film, but the interview was really bad." Another employee in the AFC East said character concerns, but then wouldn't elaborate further. Another pre-draft report said that Mitchell, who was a type 1 diabetic, didn't manage his condition well, and that that could be a cause of friction. This says, quote, "When his blood sugar's off, he's rude, he's abrasive, he doesn't pay attention in meetings. It's why you get bad character reports coming out of Georgia and Texas. But when his stuff's normal, they get him normal by lunchtime. He's out at practice, high energy, best practice player, loves football." I don't know if any of this is true. I don't know how well-rounded any of it is, but it was just some random character concerns about Mitchell before the draft.
I get with the GM when it comes to, like, you're tearing these guys down. But this is part of the whole draft process, or people trying to see how much are they willing to invest in a person. It starts with what they do on the football field, and then you venture out to off the football field and see if you can trust that individual. It's a weird game because you want to know this information, and then other teams are going to put it out there to try to deter other teams from drafting this young man. But I also agree with the GM when he says, put your name on it. Like, if you really feel this way about it, put your name on it and don't be a coward about it. But we know that's never going to happen. And good for Chris for going to bat for his player and showing that, look, I care about you. I'm not going to let people talk about you. But it ain't nothing new. I don't know why he's so upset about this. It's nothing new.
I don't either. I mean, we talked about how difficult the draft can be, and both thankful that neither of us are in front offices having to make these really tough decisions, because you kind of have to. It's like a dating profile. It's like you get three pictures and a quote. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for a lot of these players, it's like you don't know what's going to work out. All you can do is look at the film, talk to people who knew them, and try to piece together who they might become for you, not only this upcoming year, but over the next 5, 6, 7 years, if you're lucky.
You know, I've been married for a long time, been with my wife for a while. I've never had a dating profile. I wonder what my quote would be.
Well, so I have a boyfriend. I'm not using dating apps, but I was single at the time of dating apps, and I created a profile, hated it. Like, no, it just
what
wasn't,
was your quote?
It just wasn't for me. But
Stanley Cups only.
No, you don't. You don't even use quotes, but they're so pointless because it's like three pictures of someone, and then you might answer three questions, and it's like that doesn't tell you. Like, I remember one date I went on. Thank God I'm dating the person I am. But like one date I went on. Like several years ago, it was like the first one, like I created this profile. Mm-hmm. And you think you know what this is going to be when you look at the profile. Yeah. And then you go and you're like, oh, not only are these pictures not totally reflective, but like now, like maybe you're just funnier online and you can't actually communicate in person. It's just a mess.
Yeah.
That's the horrible analogy for the draft. I'm glad, the best I can do.
Yeah. I'm glad I missed that.
you really dodged a bullet. CBS NFL Today is shaking up their studio crew. Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason are out. They will be replaced by Matt Ryan. Meanwhile, James Brown, Bill Cowher, Nate Burleson, and J.J. Watt will remain.
Yeah, of course. Brown, Cowher, Burleson, and J.J., they ain't going nowhere.
No.
Simms and Boomer, I guess I can see it, but they're going to get opportunities elsewhere. But this is just what happens. Every few years, you got to go through the roster and switch things up a little bit. Change could be good, but yeah, that CBS, that crew, Brown, Cowher, Burleson, J.J., they ain't going nowhere. They'll be there for 5, 6 years.
One of your new favorite players to come from the draft is unfortunately not a Seahawk, but that's okay. You could still root for him. He's in the AFC, so it's fine. Bills rookie wide receiver Keon Coleman went viral during his introductory press conference for sharing the ways he saves money buying clothes out of season.
Now, man, you've been down with the school in Michigan for 2 years?
Guess where I got this from, though. I'm saying you got to guess. You're going to be wrong, though, but guess. Nah. Macy's, what you mean? they be on sale on the rack, all the colors. Look, $79.89, nice little deal. You can get the trench coat for like $100. Nice little, I'll take you there personally. I might go get some more colors. I need a blue one and another red one. See, I ain't know nothing about Thanksgiving. I shop like my mom. I get my coats in the summertime. You gotta shop a season or two before. Just in case, you know, and it'd be cheaper. Because you go at Thanksgiving. Everybody in Thanksgiving, you know what I'm saying?
Where's the lie? So he's wearing a yellow puffer, and at first he makes fun of the reporter who asks him about it because he's like, you forget I played for Michigan for 2 years? Like, I'm that's where the yellow's from. But then he's like, yeah, got to go get it in other colors. It's only $79. Yeah. I'll hook you up. I'll go there with you.
Uh-huh. I was just in Pullman. I went to Crimson and Gray, went to that 50% off rack. Heck yeah, give me that hoodie.
Yeah.
Nobody wants right now. That is a smart young man. I hope he continues that trend because he's going to save himself a lot of money.
Did you guys hear from Coleman, too, in his presser that he said that he ate at the Waffle House in Tallahassee so much that he had the line cook his number, his direct number, and he like pinned it in his iPhone.
Did you also see that when he got up from the press conference, all the reporters had a snack table off to the side, and he said, "Can I have a snack?" And he walked over and he took one of the cookies, and then he split it with one of the girls so that he wouldn't take the whole thing. I love this guy. Yeah. I don't even care. I'm not even a Bills fan. I'm also not anti-Bills. I'm indifferent about the Bills. I guess I do like Bills Mafia. They're fun to root for. I am so obsessed with this player. Everything he does is funny. He's got great comedic timing. I don't know if it's on purpose or not. I think it's on purpose. He seems so affable and natural.
I love that a lot of these players show their personalities sooner. To whereas when I was coming up, it was yes sir, no sir, generic answer. You're just trying to get through the process where these guys are genuinely themselves. I've seen several interviews that I just love.
I know. Yeah, there's a lot of guys. I also, as a sidebar, when you live life a certain way for so long, I do think your shopping habits won't change. Now, granted, there are plenty of people that grow up middle class, lower middle class, maybe without any money, and then they get money and they're buying designer.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that you're that person where if you won the lottery, this is how Keon Coleman seems, where if you won the lottery, you'd be like, yeah, I'm still going to just go to a South Center Mall. And
I'm
going to go to Nordstrom Rack.
I'm so basic. If I won the lotto, I would spend more money on like suits when I got to dress up and wear a suit. But everyday clothes, Stacey, you see me every day. Hoodies, sweats, hat,
I would just
sneakers,
buy more of the things I already have.
Yep. I just buy multiple. Like, let me get 3 pair of that exact shoe for $89.
Exactly.
So as soon as I scuff one, I got another one ready to go.
All right, last one here. The Chiefs have given Travis Kelce a 2-year extension worth $34.25 million. He's now signed through the 2027 season when he will be 38 years old.
Will he be ready to have kids with Taylor Swift is what we're really talking about.
I don't know.
2-year extension. I mean, come on, Chiefs. Go ahead and you're supposed to do this. He's the greatest tight end of all time when we're looking at numbers. Go ahead and at me on X and all that stuff. Someone's going to say, what about Rob? What about this? Yes, that all makes sense. But right now, I mean, Travis Kelce is a baller, and he makes Mahomes go. We always talk about the issues that they've had with drops on the outside. There's one thing that's been consistent in Mahomes' career. It's that Travis Kelce is there. They had to do this and lock it up.
The second wave of NFL free agency, I guess third, is now underway. There are some remaining names available and some holes still remaining on Seattle's roster. So do any of these names intrigue you? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Another wave of NFL free agency now underway. It's not just undrafted rookies. There are still veterans available. You know a position Seattle didn't add in this draft that I thought they would, outside of just quarterback, where I was obviously RB. Wrong, outside of running back? Safety. Now they do have a group, and John and Pete, I still do it. It's so hard. It's like a muscle memory. John and Mike were asked about it on day 3 of the draft in their press conference, specifically about the defensive back group and, you know, hey, you guys didn't add a safety. And John seems to really like the group that they have. So maybe they don't end up adding anyone. But Curtis and I, before the show, Bump, were naturally wondering, like, hey, Is this a group that they add to? This was his football.
When were you guys wondering? Because we got here at the same time. When are you guys having conversations?
We were talking.
When I'm not around.
Oh, that's true. That's
What's
true.
Going
no, you
on?
Were there. You were there. It was when.
It's one of those telepathic conversations.
It was
where we give
of
each other a look, free agency.
We were texting each other.
Oh, yeah?
Just back and forth going, don't tell Bump that we're going to talk about this.
Wow. Matt, next time you come in,
Matt,
we're sitting in the corner. And we're having our conversations, and let these two do whatever the heck they do.
That's
what
so
are we
going
to have a conversation about?
That's
I don't have anything in common.
Feel like
I think
Matthew.
You guys have a lot in common. You guys both
We both played football.
That's right.
Football.
You're both.
We are both warriors. You're
warriors. That's true. Yeah, Matt. You, for someone who doesn't particularly like sports, were the only one of both me, you, and Curtis to actually play football.
That's
Curtis,
true.
Curtis, did you play football?
I did
no,
not.
You played baseball. No. And I don't know how to run.
I'm too soft to play football.
Yeah, same.
I was too.
The question was, John, was not drafting any safeties about how you feel about the guys you have, free agents, and then Kobe and Julian. He said, to a certain extent, yes, our grading scale represents that, what our team looks like. So, yeah, it's a good group right now. This is my long-winded way to get to. You think they're bringing back Quandre and Jamal?
Right. They're still out there.
Still out there.
Still free agents. I think if they bring any of the either of those two back, it's Quandre. I feel like Jamal needs a fresh start. Mm-hmm. I think when he is healthy, he can bring something to the team. But I also think that sometimes if you're in a place for a while and things don't work out, then you have a certain perception of the team. They have a certain perception of you, even though you have all these changes with the staff. And it's just better off to move on. So I think if you had to guess between the two, in my opinion, it would be Quandre. I think Jamal ends up somewhere else.
Yeah, I think Quandre's kind of joked on his Twitter account about, like, hey, I'm team stay-at-home dad right now. So maybe he just enjoys retirement. I don't know. Like, maybe he just stays at home and doesn't re-enter the league. But it's hard for me to also see that fully happening unless it's purely his choice, because he was solid in his final season. It wasn't a career best year for him, but he was not the big problem with this defense. So I thought that he would be a cap casualty maybe, but that they would be tempted to hang on to him just because of the leadership and play that he still brought. Another name out there, Rashad Penny. They didn't add a running back in this class.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad seeing Rashad Penny get back here. The reason why, because you're not going to ask him to carry the football a bunch of times. The reason why he left is because he felt like he could be more in a different place. So he went to Philly, just didn't work out over there. He would have to understand what his role is. You got two young running backs. You are here to back them up, maybe even return kicks. I think that's honestly where he'd have his most value, is returning kicks. I believe he returned 7 or 8 kick returns for a touchdown at San Diego State. So, yeah, he would have to be open to doing more things than just being a running back. And I wouldn't be. At this point, you know who your starters are going to be for the most part when it comes to the skill position on offense. I think you're looking at offensive line and you're trying to figure out who's going to do what, who's going to step up at the center spot, who's going to step up at the guard spot. Good competition there. Everywhere else, the roles are solidified. He would have to be able to come in and help and return kicks, maybe even do special teams. Mm-hmm. Is he there in his career? I don't know.
John Schneider was asked about it. He said, Rashad Penny, sure, we had him in, talked to him. Good to see him again. He's such a great person. It's a possibility. He was not asked directly in that question about safeties about Quandre or Jamal. They don't have the cap space right now to bring back either without those other two having gotten rejections from like every other team. Like, it would have to be an incredibly, incredibly reduced salary. I think that before the draft, in the early days of free agency, we talked about it as just kind of a hypothetical. I think, though, I just thought that they would draft a safety. They ultimately seem to feel much better about their group than I thought they did. Do you?
We'll see. I felt that when healthy, Jamal and Quandre were one of the best combos in the game. All I know of these guys, of what I've seen off of film, I want to see how Mike McDonald are going to use these guys. They use a 3-safety system over there with the Baltimore Ravens, and it worked beautifully, but you also had some ballers over there. Mm-hmm. We know that these guys are coming in and on a prove-it year. Nothing is guaranteed with these guys. If they like them, I love them. I just want to see exactly what happens in that situation.
I have a question that's kind of unrelated to the free agents they might sign and more related to the position that they'll need. Kyle Hamilton, a safety with Baltimore, was a huge part of that kind of Swiss Army knife, really versatile defensive back in Mike McDonald's defense in Baltimore. You don't have that at safety necessarily with this group. Do you have it at corner? Does that come from somewhere else? Like, you know
what
I mean?
The Swiss Army knife is Devin Witherspoon. I mean, now we're talking safeties. The safeties that are available, I'm looking at these guys now. Strong safety-wise, you got Jamal Adams, Micah Hyde, you got Curse, Kareem Jackson, Ryan Neal is available, Harmon Josh, and John Johnson. The thing that deters me from a lot of these guys is that they're just getting long in the tooth. They're 30-plus years old. I think Ryan Neal is he's 28 years old. I would experiment with him because while he was here, he was great. Didn't watch much of him with the Buccaneers, but all I know is what I know when he was here. You look at the free safety position. You got Will Harris, Justin Evans, Terrell Burgess, Henry Black, A.J. Finley. You got Lane. You got a bunch of guys. You have Uphoff, never heard of him, but he's available as well. There's nobody out there that I say you have to have. This dude needs to be on your football team. So because there are no you have to have type of guys, mm-hmm. I say just roll with what you got. You're going to bring in somebody else during training camp. You're going to bring in undrafted free agents. You're going to bring in a veteran to compete and see what happens. But there's nothing out there that is so enticing that I'm willing to cut this guy, give this guy an opportunity. No, I think they're set. We will see guys in the rotation are brought into OTAs and training camp, but there's no you must have type of safeties out there.
What is your grade for the Seahawks draft class? It's tougher than you think to be able to think of one, but I have such a mixed bag from different outlets. I have an A grade from NFL Network and then from Yahoo Sports, a C+. So I'm curious to see where you guys stand. I'm going to tell you what both of these reporters said, and then you guys are going to call in with your grade for this draft class. That number to call, not text, you are calling is 866-979-3776. Don't be shy. It's super easy. What is your draft grade? You are grading the Seahawks draft. Obviously, you got to tell us why. You can't call in and say F. Bye. I'll take your response off the air. 866-979-3776. Your grade for the Seahawks draft class coming your way next.